pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is Neerja Ganesh. Networking Neerja is how she's popularly called. The go-to person for multiple things. Be it to conduct workshops, curate events, deliver a keynote address, moderate a panel, or be a panelist herself, Neerja is ready to give herself completely. Listen in as Neerja shares her journey from a quiet, meek, timid, shy girl, a plain Jane, whose school test scores were just about average, to having a 25-year-long corporate career in the IT industry, in leadership positions in MNCs, handling global clients and transitioning to running NGOs and being part of leadership in academic institutions as well. Her motto, very simple, be yourself. Hey Neerja, I can't believe I knew you for so long and never asked you for this interview. So welcome to You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, Rashmi. And I was waiting for the call. I should be honest. To say, okay, when will Rashmi think I am the right guest to be on her show? And I'm so pleased to be here.
Thank you. But you know, you've always intrigued me. You're not somebody who just straight away comes into a conversation when in a group, you wait and then slowly come in, but you definitely make a mark. So what was little Neerja like to the Neerja Ganesh that the world knows you today as?
Okay, so that little was many, many years ago. I think the little Neerja was not known to anybody, including myself. So let me start. The little Neerja just went about life as was set for her by her parents. I, of course, went to school and my parents sent me to the best of schools. I was in Indore. So that's where I grew up, right? My father was working there. So the first 12 years of my life was in Indore till 7th standard. Went to the best school there, a girls' school, in a class of 75 other girls. I think I was a nobody. Nobody knew me, nobody cared about me, and I was okay being like that, right? So I come from this very conservative family, so I didn't really break out and, you know, do much. I was average in everything, average scores in class tests and exams, absolutely zero extracurricular activities, and average looking probably. So I was there, one among the many. And grew that way. I almost say, you know, the timid, shy, plain Jane. That was probably the little Neerja. In fact, when we moved to Bangalore after 7, my father got transferred. I don't think anybody gave me a farewell. There was nothing, you know. We didn't have the internet to keep in touch, but people would exchange addresses and, you know, try to keep in touch. There was no one to do that for me. I think those years really made me observe the world because I was quiet. So what would you do then? Otherwise you chatter away. So that's the only other thing that you could do. So I observed a lot in that quietness and I reflected a lot. And I think that is what has built me up to be what I am today. I instilled a lot of values in myself. Of course, surroundings did, parents would have done it. I don't deny it. But a lot of what I kind of built myself up to be is because of that observation. And hence, probably that's why even today I don't just get going with, conversations when I'm in a group or with anyone. I give it time. I won't say that I didn't feel a bit of an inferiority complex growing up. I mean, then I would be a sadhu sannyasi, I think, to say that. I was fine. Maybe there was a little bit. But very quickly, I realized that it was okay to be yourself. You didn't have to follow the crowd. You didn't need to be, known by the crowd. You just know, you need to know yourself. And I think I managed to, get to that stage to say, this is what I want from myself and from my life. And hence, even if the world is doing something very different, I'm okay to do this. So I chose to do a BSc Maths, Economic Statistics when the entire world was doing engineering, though I got an engineering seat, or a BSc in the traditional PCM, Physics, Chemistry, Math. But I chose this, combination where only 20 other students came, and maybe largely those students came because they didn't make it anywhere else also, right? It was one of the very weird combinations then. Of course, today it's a very well-known combination. My mother, I remember my mother asking me, why do you have to go to Vijaya College, which is like 3 bus stops away? There is National College next door. I said, no, I don't want to do all of this. This is what I want to do. I didn't do the traditional MSc. I was a topper in college. Of course, I kind of, became that eventually. And I realized why I was average in my earliest school days to why I became a topper in the colleges. I pursued what I loved. School, you didn't have an option. You do social studies, you do biology, everything, because that's what is given to you. But the minute I chose something, and that's why I'm saying I didn't choose the engineering. I may have been an average there, right? While that is what was the so-called, upcoming thing. I would have gotten into a seat in MSc, if I walked in, but I didn't do that. I didn't do a master's. I did an advanced diploma in systems management. It was a diploma course from NIIT. I chose to do my second and third semester in parallel when the whole world told me, you will fail in both semesters. And I topped again. I chose to pick up a job as I was in my third semester. I chose to stay in India when I was getting married, when the whole world was saying US is the place to be. Eligible bachelors were only in the US. I'm sure you remember those days.
Of
Girls were, only wanting to go to the US, they're getting married or doing a post-graduation and jobs out there. I chose the kind of jobs, the career, the roles. I did when I was in my early years of my career, I mean, travel was a given, right? Out of India travel. Every other day, even you just had to put up your hand, or even if you didn't put up your hand, they would ship you abroad. I said, no, because I didn't see a point in being married and having this remote marriage. So I said, no. If it means that my career will go slow, it's okay. Because I really wanted this holistic life. Chose the kind of roles when the child was born and she was growing. So, and then I quit corporate after 25 years, after having been the senior leader in an IT organization, to go and run an NGO, to go and work in a college, and then just to freelance and do the things that I am doing today. So everything was a hard game, but everything was what I believed in and I wanted to. And so today I say this very proudly that the 1 month that, after I quit my corporate career, September, I had quit. October, I was not doing anything. And November onwards, I was on to something. I didn't know how to introduce myself. Because always there was Neeraja Ganesh, director XYZ company, or something of that sort, right? And in that 1 month, it stopped at Neeraja Ganesh. It felt very weird. And people were also waiting. So, yes, what? What follows after that? Today, people say, what do I put against your de name, designation when they call me for speaking engagements? And I say, whatever you feel like. Because today they reach out to the Neeraja Ganesh, right? So, trying to tell people that just be yourself, believe in what you really, think you want to be and do that. and eventually it will work out for you. Not for the world. I'm not saying that, you know, you need to be called out. I mean, if I happen to get called out, that's just a byproduct. But you will have a huge amount of satisfaction and happiness, you know, in your life if you just be yourself. So that's Neerja, the little to the big one.
Okay. No, it's very interesting, Neerja. You said, while I was looking back with you and connecting the dots, one very beautiful fact that emerged is you are somebody who is very quiet. You said plain Jane, but you also said that you were very observant of life. And when did it shift for you to understand that you have now come to a space of accepting yourself as you are? Because the choices that you made in your subjects, okay,
right,
was not very common. So who did you speak to? What prompted you to take that? Because somewhere, when you take that first step different from the world, everything becomes very different. And there's an unknown, just seeded confidence that starts coming out. And you emerge to who you are. Because late bloomers are amazing. I'm one of them. So I can see what magic late blooming did to you, because you were so ready for the world when you came to college.
Right.
And there's so much you were talking to yourself in the process. So just taking one step back to what prompted you to take that combination? Was it a teacher? Was it a conversation? Did you read somewhere? Because like you said, it was not a very popular combination.
That's
so you
right.
were taking a risk. So what prompted you to take that?
So, you know, see, school, you don't have much of a choice.
Correct.
I finished in Indore and then came to Bangalore and 8th standard. And then Kannada was, you know, absolute must. So my parents found a CBSE school so that, you know, I can skip Kannada. Because it was very tough, I think, to pick up 8th standard Kannada. So school just happened. There was no choice. And after 10th, all of the, you know, friends were doing science, physics, chemistry, maths, biology.
Correct.
And then want to do, you know, write engineering and medical engineering, which is what is very funny. When you can be an engineer, you can be a doctor. They are two different things. But no, I will write both entrances and see where I get, right? So I followed the crowd. I said, okay. And I got into National College, which was a premium institution in those days. And then what happened was everyone was going for these tuitions. You just can't go and write an entrance without having that additional coaching. My father was very clear. I paid for a very good college. Study there and do what you can with that. There is no more additional coaching and no more additional tuitions. So I really struggled. I have to say, I have to admit, I was very bad at physics and chemistry and biology. Maths was my only core subject, which I was good at. And with no additional coaching. And, you know, colleges would do only that much because those professors were anyway taking the tuitions and all the students would go to them in the morning and evening. So they just did a little bit in the college. So really, really struggled. So what I did was I locked myself up for those 2 years after I would come back from college and have all these books around me and try to study and study. I skipped all TV serials, going out, everything possible. There wasn't too much that you could do in those days, but still, even that little bit, I just cut off myself from it. There was no pressure from my parents. Let me be honest. My parents didn't really look at me as someone who would have a career, etc. You know, I come from a very conservative family. So for them, it was good enough if I graduated and they would have gotten me married. So that's about it, right? So no pressure from them that you have to do this, this, this. I put the pressure on myself because the rest of the world is doing it. And so I need to. 2 years of misery, absolute misery. And I ended up with really pathetic marks. It was 50, I think, in physics. Now I can say that. But in those days, I was very, very, you know, embarrassed to even tell my marks and some similar marks in chemistry, biology. Maths was good. Now, I could have gotten 100 on 100 in maths because that was my capability. But I was giving all my time to try and figure out these other subjects. So it didn't reach 100, but it was the best of all the four. I wrote the entrance. While the marks were bad, I think I did better in the entrance, the CUT entrance, and somehow managed to get a seat, you know, somewhere outside of Bangalore. My father was again very clear. Get in Bangalore, I'll send you. Outside of Bangalore, don't even come and negotiate. So in some ways, I think it was my parents. While it was not the actual conversation, but in some ways, because there was no option. But then I sat down and said, I have had 2 years of misery. What do I want to do? And I realized that I can't do anything other than math. So I am going to pick a combination which will be math, math, math. But there's nothing like that, right? So I did whatever research I could do. And again, no internet, right? So I walked to every college, National College, Vijaya College, MES in Malleshwaram, and, you know, all these colleges to see what, and they would give the prospectus and they would have all those combinations listed there. And this sounded like math, 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 maths. Statistics is a maths. Economics may be maths. So I said, let me do this. And Vijaya College was nearer because I'm staying in Jayanagar. Malleshwaram was a bit far away. So I did everything on my own. So to answer your question, nobody guided me, you know, because as I said, my parents were okay with anything that I did. It didn't matter. So it was just me. While all my friends said, hey, you got an engineering seat. If your father is saying, you know, he won't send you outside of Bangalore, apply for a transfer because I'm sure some seats will fall vacant and you'll get that opportunity in Bangalore. They said, no, let me really do what I want to do, which I'm good at, so that I don't have to go through the misery again. And that's how I went. And, you know, I would have, you know, paid up the fees in college all by myself. But they said, bring a parent. So then my mother came. Otherwise, you know, nobody to guide. I did everything on my own. And that was the best decision of life. Because the 3 years, I enjoyed. Because, you know, solving math was like solving crossword puzzles. So it didn't feel that I was studying. And then I think the fact that then I was topping the class, you know, then you realize that you are something. You have something in you. You may not have been, you know, best at all the other extracurricular activities, but there is something that you're good at. And if you pursue that, that is when you will bloom, right? So I think that is the transformational, you know, decision-making moment for me, after which I said, I'm just going to do what I feel is the right thing to do.
Honestly, today, you're seen as somebody who's an inspiration to women. And your talks are all around finding yourself. And you took this journey so beautifully. And you got in touch with yourself. Just the way you are saying how you got in touch with yourself is so powerful and so beautiful. And you did it all alone. And then on, I'm sure when you talked the first time, then the confidence which was just therein came out completely, bloomed the rest of your school, yeah, college, and your post-graduation journey, your diploma journey. But when you now talk to women who have that imposter syndrome, that, okay, now I know I have it, I know it, but I'm not good enough. Do you somewhere connect it to the Nirja of yesteryears, or you've just told that Nirja, fine, good, thank you for being there, but now it's a different Nirja?
No, I will never forget anything of, you know, the way, you know, we have grown up. We will never forget it. And I always acknowledge everyone also, while I say that, you know, I am always thankful to my parents that they put me to the best school. While the end point was not that they were looking for me to be a career woman.
Correct.
But still they chose the best school. Right. In Indore, there were only three schools. And at that time, there was St. Raphael's for girls, St. Paul's for boys. And there was a co-ed school. Boys, of course, I couldn't go to. Co-ed, they wouldn't send me to. So they sent me to the best girls' school, which was so far away, but they sent me. Here in Bangalore, they ensured that they will find a good CBSE school so that I don't struggle. So they did the best for me. Right. Even after I finished my BSc, the search for the groom started. Right. But I told my father, till that happens, can I, you know, do something? And this was a very expensive course. It was 20,000 rupees for 2 years. Big money. Okay, big, big money. Knowing very well that I may not even finish the course. In 6 months' time, they get me married. And then if the family says, what, no more studies? I was game for, you know, quitting the course. But my father said, okay, if this is what you want, till such time, do it. So my parents kind of helped that way. Okay. So I will never forget all. I have no grudges also, you know, to life. I think the way it enabled me to be where I am today, I'm very thankful for it. And I always remember every part of it. Of course, I'm forgetting many things because of age, not because I intentionally want to forget certain things. But I will always remember it. And if you hear my stories, in terms of how to deal with imposter syndrome, if I'm talking to someone, I will narrate some of my stories because I think there's a connection.
Yes.
The girls or whoever are able to make with that story. And hence the belief that if she could transform, I can also transform. So I always remember all of it and I will never forget it. And I always speak about it so that others can also relate and take action, which is most important. I mean, you can hear a story, it can be a fairy tale, but you also need to take action from that, which is what I really want people to do.
And today, everyone around associates Neerja, you're kind of the flag bearer of the power of networking. So for somebody who was a kind of a loner, an introvert, to bloom to this space of being known as the queen of networking must have been a journey on its own, right, Neerja, when you look back?
Yes, and that is why, you know, I always start by saying, what is the definition of networking? Yeah. Which is why people, you know, get it wrong. So even now, if I ever say we're doing the Sri Mantra, you know, the fest curation for networking, it is difficult because everyone asks, but they're not exchanging telephone numbers during that activity, Neerja. And I say, no, that is not networking. Right? That is not networking. So why I think it was probably easier for me is because of the definition that I say is networking, and I'm sure many of us agree to, which is what can you do for the rest of the world?
Yeah.
Or whoever you're connected with, whoever you're meeting. I meet Rashmi, what can I do for her? Yeah. And that comes naturally to many of us, right? And that is why I think I was able to network well, because when I met someone, I listen. That is the second rule of networking. You speak less and you listen more. I always say 80-20 rule, where you throw open-ended questions so that the other person is able to say things and you can catch. Say, okay, I think this is where I can help her, or this is probably what I can get a reference for her, and things like that. So the quietness, the observation, and the fact that you're happy to be giving is what enabled me to start networking. So I did it with people that I knew. So through school, as I'm saying, though I didn't have friends in terms of hanging around and chit-chatting, I always helped. There were people coming to me for maths doubts. When I came to Bangalore, you know, Hindi, because Hindi was a language that others struggled with. So people have always come to me for all of that. And I have always given. One night before the exam, also there will be people in the house, my mother saying, you're teaching her or you're learning for yourself, right? Then I thought that if my giving can help someone, and the giving is what? What can I give? I'm largely giving out my experiences. There's nothing more that we can give, right? So whatever is my experience, I share it with someone else. If I know somebody can help someone, I will do a reference. And that's about it. If that small thing can help people, how can I help more? That was the thought process. So how do I find more people? In the close circle, you have only that many number of friends and family. So how do you find more? So then I started going out, you know, to meetups. I started networking over social media to connect with people and to really see what else and how else can I help. So the transformation was easy because it is not what others think, that I meet Rashmi and then I say, okay, what do I tell her? What can I get from her? I have to drop in my business card and somehow keep following up with her, say, hey, will you call me to your talk or show or not? Will you call me to your talk show, right? Yeah. It just happens. And you read the Bhagavad Gita. I've not read it, but I think that's what it says, right?
Yes.
What goes around comes
from. True.
So that's what it is. So it wasn't very tough for me.
Yeah. Honestly, I think this is networking defined at its simplest.
Right.
Otherwise, it seems such a complicated thing to do. And I think the simplification you have done and the definition that you have kept for yourself, when anything is at its base, and it's completely easily explainable to somebody around you, I think you got it. Okay. And I think that's where you score over the rest, because you've kept it very simple over the years as well. Immaterial of who's in your network, you've maintained this. And this seems your principle wherever you're going. And I think that's how it becomes easy. So for women who you are there where women are in transition, women are on a career break and want to come back. You seem to be there just giving yourself for women around you. So what are some of those common stories that you see, the threads that you can connect to what women need to tell themselves in order to come out of the space they have cocooned themselves in to say, I'm not good enough?
So my first mantra, is, and I have many such mantras. So one of them is, what's the worst that can happen? So for all of us who have the imposter, and it is there in me also. So don't think that, I don't have an imposter syndrome sitting over here that is telling me, you made a grammatical mistake. This will go on air and everyone will, bother about it. And what will Rashmi think? It is there. Like on Sunday night, I was addressing a crowd of women. They are in Germany. They're Indians who have moved to Germany. And the hostess, she asked me to talk about career opportunities for women in general. And the imposter is telling me, have you ever even stepped out of India? You're talking to women in Germany. Do you know what opportunities are there? You're going to make a mess of it. So imposter will always tell you. So don't even try to throw it away. Let it be there. Okay? Because otherwise that is itself a joke. Let it be there. But quieten it down with this one question. What's the worst that can happen? So what's the worst that can happen in this conversation? I probably, mess it up royally and Rashmi's 1 hour wasted. And this will never go on the YouTube or never go on a podcast. That's it. If somebody asks for a reference to Rashmi saying, hey, do you think Nirja is a good speaker? Can I call her? Rashmi will say, watch out. I think sometimes she kind of goes wrong. That's it, right? That's it. Nobody is going to kill you for, having made a mistake of this sort. So I always say, ask that question and the response to it. And all of us deal with the responses in different ways. If the response to it is something that you can still deal with, it will make you uncomfortable. Of course, I'll be very embarrassed. And, I won't be able to speak to you for the next so many days if I really mess this up. But you'll be able to deal with it, right?
Yeah.
You need to be a little, in an discomfort position. Otherwise, you're never going to grow. So you have to take the plunge. That's how I, advise women. And for me, if you ask me the question, what's the worst that can happen? If the answer is not that I will lose my life or some of my known people will lose their life, I will take the plunge. Losing a job, losing money somewhere, I kind of talking nonsense on the stage. Maybe, I just kind of get paralyzed with nervousness. None of that worries because I know I can get over it. Who mattered to you most? The people who mattered to you most are still going to, remain the same. They're not suddenly going to, distance yourselves from you because of something that you did. So that question is paramount. So that's what I tell everyone. Ask that question. And that is the way I've grown people in my career also. Every time I would take a role, it would be, a big mess in a team or a project. And they would say, now set this right. I will pick people from that team who wouldn't necessarily be the best qualified people. And I would say, you are going to lead these initiatives for me. They will become the leaders. So I'm not one of those. I've never been one of those who will take my best of leaders from the previous team. You see that trend. When a leader joins another company, another 5 will join him. I've never been like that. I'll say from this team, the subject matter experts, I will groom them. They have grown to be much better than me in the next few years. Similarly, whatever initiative comes my way, and Shrimantra networking is a great example, right? So I had to pick up 3 other people. And I said, it doesn't matter whoever it is. I don't want to pick up. If someone has an interest, I'm happy to work with that someone. And I have seen people being nervous. I have seen people, forgetting lines. It's okay. It's okay, right? So what's the worst that can happen? Keep that in mind.
Yeah. And that's so important. That is so important. I think from there, if you are sure of the answer, you can climb up to any heights that you
want. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Nirja, you are a storyteller. So any story that you still remember and always is the reason why you pull yourself up on not a very good day also to say that, Nirja, this is what you're meant to do. So go ahead and do it.
Let me think which one I should, tell the audience. I'm not able to recollect something which was in terms of somebody saying, kind of patting my back, saying, "It's all right. You made a mistake. It's all right." I'm not able to recollect immediately those kinds of stories. But I think the transformation, so if I may say, two transformational stories which I may want to narrate. How did that quiet nature become someone who will speak? Right. So I was always quiet. In the first 10 years of my career, I didn't even say hi to my neighbor. Not because I had an attitude. It's just that I didn't know, how to speak to someone, or, I didn't know how to engage. And people also didn't do that with me. Was when I was given a position of responsibility. So I was made a team lead of this team of 10 other people. Because in those days, leadership didn't mean all these qualities that we speak about today. It just meant whoever was the most technically qualified. I was the most technically qualified. Of course, everybody else also was almost the same number of years of experience, but maybe a little less. So they made me the team. And I felt the responsibility to do what is right for the team. And that's something that I've stood by. You've got to do what is right. And we were going through a lot of transformation within the team, within the organization, and this team was not getting any support from the management. And we had this metrics reporting, right? So there is always an on-site, and the on-site was putting us down, saying Bangalore is not performing and all of that. And I felt a strong need to put the case out there to say that we're doing everything possible and we are doing all right, but you can't keep pushing us down. So I opened my mouth because I felt it is important in the role that I am to speak up for my team. And I did that in a huge gathering to the managing director of the company. And the rest of the team leaders and people who were more senior than me kind of were shocked. This girl who never speaks is opening her mouth. And I was almost like challenging, the managing director, and they thought she'll, if not thrown out of the company, she'll be definitely thrown out of the team. This is not the position for her. She's not able to deal with things that are happening in the team. She's coming, crying about it. But the MD heard me out, and the next day he brought about some changes in the organization, not only in our team level. He actually realized that that is something which is required for the entire organization. Maybe somebody's not speaking up about it, so a change was brought about, and that while did fantastic things for the company. But what it did to me was, it's okay to speak. So I definitely give it to him. If he had not heard me out that day, I don't know. I may have gone back into my cocoon or what else I would have done. I don't know. But I always stand for the right. I will stand, wherever it is. So that was one of the, transformational moments. And I realized that I need to speak. It's okay to speak. And after that, I'm not stop speaking, whenever there is a need. The second I will say is the transformational moment is when I quit from my corporate and I went to head the not-for-profit foundation. NGOs are lean teams, right? You don't have too many people, so you've got to do everything. So I used to say that other than making chai, I did everything myself. There was a chai wala who would come and give chai and and there were, in the for-profit entity, there were a lot of young girls. And I used to kind of, I had to unlearn a lot. In the corporate world, you're sitting over there and everything gets done. And there's a particular way and you call the shots and things will be done. Here, it's not like that, right? You have to learn. It's almost like a startup culture. And those young girls would come and teach me social media as an example. And they'll say, "You will never be able to do it, ma'am." And they'll go away. And I said, "Why can't I do it?" "Of course, I will learn and do it." So I didn't have the big ego. I was okay to learn from whoever. I was okay to unlearn. And I knew that maybe there are certain things that they also have to learn from me, but I waited for the time to come. I didn't want to, kind of show off that, I have 25 years of experience and, this is what you're telling me. I said, "Okay, I will learn from you. If you're not teaching me, I will learn myself." And today I'm called, a LinkedIn, I'm not an influencer or whatever, right? People say, "Can you write a post for me?" and things like that. But I think that not having an ego and be open to the changes that are happening around you, and change, is even before you know things change. So you have to be flexible. So I think these are some, a couple of stories that comes to me. I always remember this to say that I've tided over all these situations, and the only way I tided over it was by doing the right thing. Reflecting to say what is required in the moment and do the right things. That's what is coming to me at the moment.
And they are definitely moments, I think, for all of us. There are moments like this which come, which kind of shift or pivot our entire outlook of life itself. And when we look back and recollect those moments only, we realize where exactly that moment came into our lives to make us who we are today. Yeah, so now moving on. You and I with Rashmi Shetty was born in the pandemic because I noticed that people were hesitant to wear a mask. They were complaining for that before the second wave. And that's where the quest for looking out for those people who went beyond themselves to make a difference, find that uniqueness, that individuality, and still blend with the rest of the world was the purpose behind putting out these stories through the podcast. So the pandemic was reflective for all of us. We realized we were on a treadmill. All we needed to do is switch off, get off, and wait.
True. True.
But it took a pandemic to tell us that. For you, Neerja, what did the pandemic do? And what were your reflections in the pandemic from the pandemic?
I think one of the things that, and more many of us would have realized, is that I think the human race is extremely adaptive. While we are the privileged lot, and I know that there are a lot of people who had big losses, losses of money, losses of lives and all of that. But despite that, they also adapted, right? So that was a huge reflection to say, we can adapt to anything that comes our way. Why does it need to be a trigger like that? Why can't we, you know, reflect and make the change if required? That's something that I really, really kind of, you know, thought through. We didn't necessarily need a wardrobe full of saris. We didn't, you know, need to go to a theater and a mall to entertain ourselves. Families came closer over Zoom. You know, so 2020 was the year in our family where, you know, there was my wedding, 25th anniversary, cousins, 25th anniversary, 50th birthday is happening, 50th anniversary happening, Raksha Bandhan, Diwali, Navratri over Zoom, which we could have done before 2020 also. Zoom was always there. There was some platform, but we never, never, ever thought that let's get together. And the happiness that we got even with that Zoom celebration was way beyond actually, you know, going out to a party or, you know, traveling to a Chennai and meeting everyone, maybe. All of that happened to all of us. But what pains me a little bit today is that we've forgotten it. The government keeps saying, still wear a mask when you go out, and we don't do it, thinking that, you know, everything is over and out. And we are, I think, going overboard in the ways we want to make up for those 2 years. Big fat weddings are becoming fatter. Right. And malls and, you know, vacations are, you know, becoming more luxurious. And I don't say no to it. I'm not saying that, you know, you shouldn't. But did we forget the 2 years so very easily? Do we need another trigger like this to, you know, set back and for us to reflect? That's what, you know, it pains me a little. But otherwise, I think those who have made that realization through those 2 years and have kind of carved out, you know, a more realistic path for themselves and their lives. I think, you know, that definitely is doing some good to humanity, is what
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. Because one thing I've noticed is people have become far more kinder when they come to you and come up to help. Bangalore, which never ever gave way for ambulances, suddenly is giving way for ambulances. And it's really nice to see it, because in Chennai, there's the green corridor. So that's something that you see very often. But Bangalore, I was very surprised recently also when I saw everyone just stopping wherever they could for the ambulance to pass. So that's when it hit me that, yes, it has made a difference.
Right.
And a good point here, Neerja, to move to the closure with 3 life lessons that you'd like to leave us.
The first one is, be yourself. Don't try to be anybody else. You don't need to be. You can be yourself, and however different that is, and how much ever the world says, why are you so different and weird, it's okay. Be yourself. I'm not saying it in a very, you know, I'm not saying you got to rebel and be yourself. That's not the message here, because the youngsters would say this, you said be yourself and yeah. No, that's not the message. There are boundaries, there are value systems, etc. But if there is something you really, really believe in, go after it. So believe in yourselves and, you know, do what you want to kind of, you know, do for yourselves and for your life and career. The second one, I think I would definitely tell, and this is a message for the women through this podcast, ask for what you want. Don't just keep quiet. It's a life lesson. you know, I opened my mouth and I told the managing director, and he did it, right? Go and ask for what you want. And if you don't get it in the first go, again, ask. Keep asking. It's only the kind baby that gets the milk, right? So just get that. And the third one, I will say this again, that it's more like a definition of networking, but I won't use that term, networking. But I'd say give what you can to the rest of the world because it will come back to you. Don't keep, you know, don't be, this instant gratification doesn't help. Right? What will I get? What will I get? So only what's in it for me? I never look at it as what's in it for me. My question to any opportunity or anything that comes my way is what's the worst that can happen? And if that answer is, you know, I can deal with this, I will go after it. Right? So things will always come back to you. So can you be, you know, more giving? And you see the difference that comes because of that.
Wow. And that's exactly who you are, constantly looking on where to make a difference. Nirja Ganesh, thank you so much for being on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Honor, pleasure, like always, talking to you, listening to your story, and a lot more of who you are, I got to know now with this conversation. Thank you for opening up.
Thank you, Rashmi. Thank you for having me here.
Stay blessed and continue to inspire, my friend, because I think we need people like you to tell us life is all about giving. Thank you.
Sure.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.